This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Boom Boom, you're in the Doom Room, a podcast all about Doom Patrol on HBO Max. Each episode of the podcast will break down the big moments on the show, talk about comic book origins and Easter eggs, and tell you which character is the most doomed. Hosted by Justin, Pete, and Alex of the long-running Comic Book Club podcast, episodes roll out weekly, or you can listen to the first three seasons with over 34 episodes right now at patreon.com/comicbookclub. The Doom Room. I'm doomed. You're doomed. We're all doomed. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you from a couple of places on the internet. We're live over on YouTube, the Tube. We're live here on Crowncast. Maybe you're listening to us later on wherever you get your podcast, wherever that is. We appreciate it. And we have a great show for you tonight. But yeah. Before we get into it,
Pete mentioned
he wanted to talk about something.
Yeah,
I know what it is. And I just want to say I framed it up as he's playing with fire here. We'll see if he gets burned. Take it away, Pete.
Okay, great. I just wanted to I just wanted to circle back around to Zalbin's being a piece of shit, demanding Gabriel Rodriguez, an unbelievable artist, who was nice enough to include us in his art, that he isn't churning out things fast enough. And he had something to say.
First of all, Pete,
it.
I want to say thank you for presenting this without context or explanation. That's
yes,
that's how I roll.
That helps that's your case right there. That helps your case right there. So we taped a podcast about Lock and Key, The Golden Age, the new volume that came out today, actually, in bookstores. It's up in Lock and Key Unlocked over in that feed over there.
It's amazing.
It is. It's fantastic. We talked about it. Just a warning, a huge spoiler warning there, because we really do get into the content of the book. But it's phenomenal to talk about. We had, I think, a fun running joke there where we're talking about how it took them 10 years to put out the stories, and we're like, come on, pick up the pace, Gabriel Rodriguez.
Hurry it up, Gabe.
Yeah, hurry it up. Gabe hit us up on Twitter. He's like, I'm trying to get them out quicker. Very fun. And then Pete was like, yeah, fuck you, Zalbin.
I know. I was like, Gabriel's playing along with the joke. Mm-hmm. He clearly is a hard worker. We're having some fun. And Pete's like, yeah.
Well, and I'll mention, it's interesting. This comes hot on the heels on a huge flap that happened on Twitter recently that was also very serious, where Matthew Rosenberg posted something.
And
Pete responded to him, said, as everybody knows, a.k.a. Bergie, we always back you up. And he responded being like, what are you talking about?
I don't think you know what a.k.a. means.
Right. I don't think you
no,
know
I
what
I think it's more the Bergie part he doesn't
The Bergie part is like and everybody calling him that.
He said that to me as in like, I don't think, you know, since nobody calls me that, I don't think you understand what that means.
That's and Pete said. Panicked. You straight up panicked. You were like, oh, no, Bergie doesn't like me anymore. What do I do? You deleted your Twitter account. You sold Twitter to Elon Musk for $44 billion.
That's and right. People Total haven't panic been move. Reporting on how much Pete was involved in the sale of Twitter to Elon Musk. Heavily.
Yes, but he was joking as well, and it was fine. And then Jen Grunwald, one of our favorite editors at Marvel, also
she
piled on you.
Yeah, that was
and
not cool.
Pete just backed off again.
Nice.
Total.
He backed up the truck, which is what Pete does, no doubt. Elon Musk, how often does he call you for his moves when like he's moving through SpaceX? I know you were the one like X-Men. He was like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you know the original name of the company was Tez LePage?
Justin, congratulations on being an uncle.
Thank you. Yes. Pete drums from news item to news item without explaining it and getting sort of into our personal lives in a lot of ways. But yes, my brother just had a baby yesterday.
It's huge.
It's huge.
The baby is
huge. Too big. I'm sure he'd be excited to have his birth announced on Comic Book Club, the best spot to announce a baby being born. But yes, the kid is here.
Oh, that's exciting. Oh,
right off camera?
Yeah, I am. They brought him right over. They're like, I'll do the tests myself. He's right here in this dank basement that I call home.
Also, Pete, how is you were auditioning to be an anchor on CNN Plus, right? How was that going? You came in and were like, top story. I don't like it. And next up, here we go.
And they shut the whole thing down.
Shut the whole thing down, man. A couple of items of business here that I'll mention. First of all, as we've been doing for a while here, we have had Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet, our CBC chef, has been curating cocktails for us every week. This week, we are back to the Gotham City Cocktail Cookbook by Andre Darlington. And we're doing the King Green, which is a King Croc cocktail or crocktail. So this is, it's the King Green is white rum, lager, lime juice, and simple syrup. And it's delicious. It's real good. Yeah.
Oh, that looks like a good one. I'm curious. I didn't get to make it today, but the addition of the lager, I'm curious about.
I picked this up at the store. I have a Ebb's Lager number one from here in Brooklyn.
Ooh, look at the
which
mic.
Is pretty good. It's nice. Black. It tastes like college. I'll throw that out there.
What does that mean?
You know what it means.
No, you know, hey, bro, you know what it means. When you ride with Zalbin in college, you ride hard. And that's drinking some lagers. And you know what else
tastes like stuff? Dusty books in the Cornell library. What does it taste like?
You and I clearly had very different college experiences, I guess, Pete. But my wife, who tried this, who doesn't like
my wife,
great reference, thought this was great. She really liked it. She doesn't like beer, but she was like, oh man, I'll have one of these too, which I was very surprised about. It's sort of the lager kind of brings it together a little bit. You taste a little more of the rum, the simple syrup, the lime. Great stuff. Highly recommend.
So you're driving your wife to drink. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
In honor of Morbius's continuous rise to fame, I'm drinking human blood over here on my end.
This isn't the part where we talk about what we're drinking, but thank you.
Yes. Well, why don't we move on to another thing then? So we've been asking folks to drop us recommendations of things to review on the Stack podcast in the comment section on Apple Podcasts. Just leave us a rating, 5 stars if you want. It's all good. And a comment.
Now we can fully ask for the 5 stars.
Give us 5 stars or else.
You don't need to soft play the rating.
I don't know, whatever you want to do. 5 stars, 4.5 stars, which is impossible. So I guess you'll have to round it up to 5 stars. Like, honestly, your choice.
Nice.
So here we've got one. This is a request we're actually going to be doing this week on the Stack. We're going to be talking about JLA Rock of the Ages from DC Comics by Grant Morrison, which is fun. But we got a new one here. This is from our friend Jolene on iTunes. A fun time for years, plus a recommendation. I've been listening to the show, but feels like forever now, and it's consistently enjoyable and has a great Slack community, too. They read and talk about so many comics and answer live questions on a weekly basis. It's amazing that they have time for other stuff. The secret is, we don't.
We don't.
Yeah. I'd love to hear you read and review a story that greatly influenced me as a kid, Catwoman, The Cat File by Chuck Dixon and Jim
Yes.
Ballant.
Wow. I love some Chuck Dixon, a writer that doesn't get a lot of play, but was just a yeoman when it came to making comics back then.
Yeoman.
So there you go. Right. We won't. Kevin's comment here on Crowdcast is 1 star. I'd love to see them do. Yeah, please don't do that. Maybe we won't read that comment.
1 star. I'd love to see them review shutting up for a while.
But thank you for the suggestion. We won't review it on this week's Stack podcast, but we'll probably do it on next week's Stack podcast. And folks, we are going to move over to our guest for this evening. He's an amazing artist and one of the co-creators of the Manhattan Projects, which you probably know well, but he has a new project on Zoop called Axe Wielder John that looks awesome. Very excited about it. It actually just launched, I believe, earlier today and is already a runaway success. So I'm excited to chat about it. Any second now, we'll have Nick Patara here in the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very exciting that it's doing so well. The video on Zoop looks amazing.
Yeah, while we're waiting here for Nick to come in, we can mention we've had a couple of guests from Zoop over the past couple of weeks. This is a curated platform, kind of like Kickstarter, kind of like Indiegogo, but they work directly with creators and recruit them, I believe, or curate them at the very least. We could probably find out more from Nick about that.
It's presumably. A great idea. That's a great idea to ask the questions.
Yeah, you might have to cancel and then ask them again if it does not working.
Well, Pete, tech head over here.
Well, that's what he did last time, and then it worked.
I love that you're part of the machine now, Pete.
Yeah, you're our producer. Congratulations.
Yeah, you're the line. It's funny. I work as a producer, and Pete, you're the actual line producer of this show.
I'll take it. I'll take it. Sure, yeah. I'll add to my credit.
Tell you what, I am going to do what Pete just recommended. I'm going to
reward
him. Yeah, that's right, man.
This is weird.
This does work sometimes.
The
Pete, you got any other tech suggestions?
Finally taken over the tech at the asylum.
Ah, there we go. Wow, Pete got it right. Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
How's it going, guys? Sorry about the technical issue. I accepted it, but then they didn't let me in, so...
Hey, no worries, man.
No worries. We got our main man, PLP, here fixing shit.
Pete used to work at the Apple Store, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I was at the fruit stand. But listen, man, first off, congratulations on this. This looks unbelievable. I watched the video before. It's such a cool, badass idea. I'm rocking my He-Man shirt in honor of it today. But why don't you tell the people a little bit about it?
Well, I have a new book. It's a 148-page oversized hardcover. It's called Axe Wielder John. It's my writer-artist debut. If anyone knows who I am, and they probably don't, but if they do, it's I worked at Image for about 10 years, and mainly the biggest book I did was Manhattan Projects with Jonathan Hickman.
Great book.
Which was amazing. Yeah.
Know it well.
Yeah, it was a pretty good book. We did well on it. Sales went well. We made the New York Times bestsellers list, and I got nominated for an Eisner on it. About 2 or 3 years ago, my daughter got sick in the hospital, and we had to live in the Ronald McDonald House. And when I was there, I was at a lot of time to doodle and a lot of time just to sketch out ideas in my sketchbook while she was healing up. My daughter got better, and so it's all good there. But when she was in the hospital, people would come up, and godly people would say, give it over to God, because she was sick. And people who trust the doctors say, you got to trust the doctors. But there was a helplessness there. And so I started drawing this character, Axe Wielder John, in my sketchbook. And he was this guy in the same predicament that I was in, where he was basically, he was a guy who was going to fix the world his way. And it was something that I couldn't do at the time. And then I thought it'd be cool that if his way was that he was an axe wielder. And then I started writing in problems, or problems started presenting themselves that he could no longer chop into to fix. And then a seed of a story kind of started. And the way the hero came to me when I, in a time of need, kind of for me, I really wanted to honor the fact that he came to me in a time of need. I'm about to turn 40 soon. And I always thought, Jack Kirby created the Marvel Universe right after 40. So I was like, okay, it's time. If I'm going to write and draw my own thing, I'm going to make this no matter what. And so about a year and a half ago, I really started drawing it, investing in it. I've been funding a really fantastic creative team. And it's this story of this like faceless barbarian who's cursed to fall in love with the heads of his many victims. And at least that's what the people in the story say about him. And it's got all these cool twists and turns. It's a big love letter to Masters of the Universe, but done at a very adult level. And I'm super excited about it. We launched today on Zoop, and we hit our crowdfunding goal of 25K in the first 5 hours.
Wow.
And I think we're approaching.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Zoop is it's a new platform. And on Zoop, they do the fulfillment and stuff. And I knew for me, I wouldn't be able to do the fulfillment. I'm not good at mailing stuff out. So when they showed up, I thought they were really the answer that a lot of creatives needed to enter the crowdfunding space. And I was looking at him for a while. I talked to Hickman, who's a kind of a mentor and a good friend, obviously a co-creator, and he was going to use him for his Substack books. So when it came time to go, I talked to them. Kickstarter reached out and offered me their premium spot, so I had to make a choice between the Kickstarter or Zoop. And I ended up going with Zoop. I like those guys a lot, Eric and Jordan, who run it. And I just felt like it was a good place for me to dip my toe in the crowdfunding space. It was a kind of a big gamble since they're a new platform, but it's working out fantastically so far. Really thanks to guys like you who allowed me to come on their shows and expose the product to their audience has made all the difference in the world. So I appreciate you guys having me on today. It's the hardest part of making the book. It's easy to sit here and draw in my room all day, but it's hard to get out there and promote yourself. So thank you for
letting me. We have the opposite experience in our lives. Essentially. This is easy for us. Doing anything else is hard.
You know, not to get too personal about it, but it seems to me that at least part of the inspiration here is you have a character who can attack his problems physically when you were in a space when you could not do that. Do you feel like that was part of where that inspiration came from?
Yeah, that was the craziest thing. The famous French artist Mobius or Jean Giraud, he had this saying about drawing, and it was that an artist encodes reality. And I really like that explanation of art, because to me it meant delineating the world around you visually into your own hand, your own line, your own craft. What I realized when I started writing, it's like 10 times as much in writing. You are always writing little bits of your life or little bits of your story. And whether you know it or not, you'll read it later and you'll realize that there's this almost metaphysical interaction with the fiction and the reality. And I think Hickman talked about it when he was doing his FF run. He's like, everything I'm writing is father and son stuff right now. I must be going through something, you know? I did realize that early on. And for me, I really loved, you know, Masters of the Universe as a kid. I call that genre muscle tech, where it's way too much masculinity and, you know, rusty technology mixed. And so I thought, can I tell a story in this genre that I don't know if it's been explored at a really an adult level? Maybe the closest is Metal Hurlant or Heavy Metal, you know, where you're getting like really weird sci-fi stuff. But then I wanted the story to have some heart because of the way the character came to me and how I came up with it. So for me, it was it's the ultimate passion project for me. And like I said, I've sunk a ton of money into it, and I was rolling the dice with Zoop, and it's working out great right now. So on the first day, we'll probably be over 30K soon, and I'm excited. It's 148 oversized hardcover, and some of the details about it are I only got 14 pages left to draw, so I try to bring it to the market complete. Every panel is its own 11 by 17 page. So it's most in comic books, most pages with panels are 11 by 17. Well, I took every panel and put it on its own board. And so I've been giving myself assignment of doing a panel a day, which is actually a whole page a day. And so I've been working that way, and I'm almost through now. And I got a great creative team. I just went out and hired the people I wanted to work with. So Chris Stevens, I got to give a shout out to. He's my editor, and he's really gotten to the story beats with me and helped me iron stuff out as a new writer. And Michael Garland is my colorist, and he draws too, and he knows form so well, he heightens the art. And we got Farron Delgado on the lettering, who's doing these really fantastic sound effects incorporating to the art really well, which I'm really digging. So yeah, I'm super pumped.
So wait, how many pages? If every panel is 11 by 17,
very good question.
What's your page count at right now? That sounds insane. I've never heard of that, someone working that way before.
I can tell you the weight of them exactly, because I had another art rep recently. It was 18
You're
pounds.
Fetching them every day?
18 pounds of pages. I had to mail them out. It cost me a few $100s to get them out to my art rep in California.
I bet.
But yeah, so the stack was probably... I put a muscle man figure that was 3 inches tall next to it, and it was probably closer to 6 inches, you know?
Just to keep going with this. So presumably that you have presumably you have multiple panels per page. So are you then taking the art and shrinking it down? Is it oversized pages? How are you tackling that?
Most of it is widescreen. Because most of it's widescreen, or all of it is widescreen. So it's either a double page spread that I'll do really big, or it'll be three tiered panels. So they kind of almost fit onto the 11 by 17 ratio, not exactly. So if it's 2/3 of a page, then I tape two boards together like a real double page spread, but it's really only a 2/3 panel page. So it's just this really massive oversized tape together jigsaw puzzle by the time it's done. And it was just a fun way to work, and I really wanted to do my best work I possibly could do. And so on top of that, I restricted myself to only using the 003 and the 005 micron, which are the two tiniest microns. So I went in and inked it with very delicately.
You're making this so hard. You're challenging yourself here.
I figured I can't draw better than everybody, but I'll draw bigger than everybody. You know?
I like that. Nice.
I can walk down Artist Alley and say mine's bigger. I feel pretty good.
Oh my God. There it is. That sort of fits with He-Man. General there. So what do you love about He-Man that made you sort of run through that genre with this?
Well, when I was a kid, I loved action figures so much. And I had this angst at 12 or 13. I didn't want to give them up. You know, you're getting too old. And there's lots I love about He-Man. You know, I think it's very interesting. Like, there's a very romantic take where Robert E. Howard wrote him in words, and then guys like Frazetta painted him in paintings, and the spirit is captured in a new vessel. Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be him, and so he sculpted his body his whole life, and so he's like a, you know, an icon. And then people are, you know, I love the arm wrestling stuff, and some of my buddies arm wrestle with the Arnold Classic, and yeah, he's like their hero, right? And then it transfers, like, the, I'm speaking of Conan and not He-Man yet, but then when Mattel was getting that license, and they got the Conan license, it was way too violent, and Star Wars was popular at the time, so they just shelved Conan so it couldn't compete with them, and then they combined bits of Conan and Star Wars together to make Masters of the Universe to sell to kids. And then that's what I fell in love to, and I found my little machismo characters with. And then what's interesting to me is now I get to delineate it back in comic book form. And so I love thinking about the spirit of, you know, whatever weird masculinity, power fantasies floating from vessel to vessel and being in that lineage with this book. So that's kind of cool. And then speaking of just toys in general, I had that angst at 12 or 13 and I didn't want to give them up. And luckily I had two younger brothers, so I get to, you know, make excuse to use their toys. But then as I learned to draw at 17 or 18, and it started getting gigs in comics, you know, 25, 26, and getting, you know, at the some little work at the Big Two, little work on Ninja Turtles, I realized that now it's socially acceptable for me to play with my toys again if I draw them, you know? It's just like the skill set of me drawing them in the 2D form gives me a pass to be a big kid again. And I really loved, like, getting my childhood back when my career kind of took off, so... Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's very funny, the history of He-Man. That it was like, well, we want to do Conan, but we're going to do He-Man. I guess we'll name it He-Man because it's pretty close to Conan, but it's nonsense. Real quick, around the horn, favorite He-Man characters outside of He-Man from the whole Master of the Universe.
I love all of my favorite books generally have really great bad guys. So, I mean, Skeletor's great. Trapjaw is great.
Trapjaw is great.
Merman is cool. Just all those bad guys. Like, no, like, He-Man's really over because of all the cool bad guy designs, you know? It's same thing with Batman and same thing with Spider-Man. Like, all the, if you don't got a good rogues gallery, you almost don't have a good superhero. So with Axwelder John, we have this character, Lord Fang, and he's very much like, you know, Skeletor 5.0. He's got, he's a green skeleton in this crazy meat suit, and he's got, his eyes are spiders. so he has a skull face, but the spiders in his eye sockets are, when they move around, you know, the ass of the spider, the hourglass is moving. So it looks like Lord Fang is looking around and the legs come out of the eye socket to make it look like eyelashes and stuff. So
pretty,
like,
horrifying.
I was trying to make him as terrifying as possible. So it's been a lot of fun designing the bad guys. I mean, for some reason I'm a sidekick guy too. So Man at Arms is cool. You know, Fisto's all right. You know, they're all kind of fun.
Well, wait, while you're talking about the look of the book, I'd love to just hear you talk generally about, like, the main character is pretty gnarly himself. The world itself is pretty raw to the point that he has no nose and his skin is kind of cut open. What was the inspiration there? How did you tackle all of that? And what was too far or not far enough?
Well, I was trying to see if I could bring this to market and make it fully the way I want it to make it, and make a book I'd want to read it like 14 or 15. And speaking of Mobius and Masters of the Universe, he actually did do some design work on the Masters of the Universe movie. The Frank Langella Skeletor, when he was all gold at the end, that was a Mobius design. And the Dolph Lundgren suit was actually designed by him too. I actually am an original art collector, and I own the Mobius original of his first Dolph Lundgren suit design. I thought design wise, I was like, Mobius isn't around anymore. He's a huge influence on me. You know, I'll be a watered down Kmart version of him, and maybe I can make that He-Man comic that I have always wanted. And then specifically with Axwelder John's face, I want it to be as gross as possible because I want to shine a different light on him. You know, I kind of want him to be prejudged. So when the storytelling beats turn and you see, I love the idea of, and it comes from the movie, it comes from Life, but it comes from the movie Unforgiven, where people are talking about you and things are said about you based on what you look like, if it's English Bob or if it's, sorry for dating, putting a 30-year-old movie out here.
But nice. Don't worry about it.
But then you see them in action and something different changes. The beautiful thing about Eastwood's character and William Money, the whole movie, people are saying things about him based on a past and a past that he's, you know, wants to overcome, you know, Unforgiven. And he always just says yeah or no or whatever. And he shrugs it off until, you know, one of his friends gets hurt, and then he starts drinking whiskey again and his, you know, his evil powers come back. So I really want that with John, specifically with his face design. I wanted him to be repulsive, but I really like, there's this UFC fighter named Don Fry, and he's got this big mustache, very Tom Selleck-esque. And I like the sight gag of John being, in the whole comic, being overly machismo and then breaking the most masculine thing on his face in half. It was like a sight gag, right? I'm going to break his masculinity. And John definitely gets taken down a peg in the book. So no one's going to know that reading it because I'm playing it very serious. But to me, it was a funny sight gag to break his mustache in half. And then I was like, yeah, I might as well just take his whole damn nose off and draw a scar down his face. And then I got my distinctive hero. So, and then I got this great cover artist. His name's Das Pastoras. And he's worked with Jason Aaron in America, but not many people. But he's worked with Jodorowsky overseas on the Meta Baron stuff. And he worked at Metal Herlant. And he's this fantastic Spanish painter. And he was available. And I spoke to Jose Villarubia, his rep and his translator, and I was able to hire him to do the first three volume painted covers. And I wanted him to feel like realistic. So he has like I wanted him to feel like he exists in this world and not just through my cartoony hand, because I know I'm cartoony and a little silly with my work, but I wanted him to feel really present to a viewer. And I really wanted that on the hardcover. So whenever, if it's in a store, you know, you walk past it, you're like, what? This is a hideous thing. But then if you read the book, maybe he's not as hideous once you get to know him, you know. Yeah. That's what I really wanted to
He seems
to
like
show.
He could be nice. I mean, in the sort of motion comic video, it's pretty aggressive, but he's got a spark in there. Seems like a friendly dude.
I mean, sort of talking about that, you have quotes from both Jeff Darrow and Frank Quitely on there talking up the book, which seem like very direct influences for your art, particularly in this project. Who else were you drawing on? I mean, I know you brought up Mobius, you brought up Jodorowsky and other people. Who were the specific influences from this?
I mean, Frank Quitely is a huge, he's a huge influence. He's the reason why I picked up a pencil when I read his Authority at 17. I love the Midnighter and love the Apollo and loved how violent they were. I had no idea that comic book characters could be gay and be violent and kill people, because I was such a new reader at the time. And that made me like, man, comic books are awesome, man. I want to draw, you know, I want to draw. So then I started drawing and taking it seriously then. And then I found Mobius and the Mobius Tree of Artists, which Jeff Darrow and then this other guy named Seth Fisher, who I really love, who's of course passed away. So those three, those are my like four biggest influences. And I'm lucky enough now where I've been around the industry a little bit, where I've got a relatively pretty good friendship with Quitely. I flew out and met him in Scotland and got to visit him, and he's really sweet.
That's awesome.
He'll write me and ask me how my wife and kids are, which always blows my mind, you know. He's like the sweetest guy. And then Jeff Darrow called me from France like a couple weeks ago, and he was just wanted to shoot the shit and see what I was up to. And he liked Axe Wielder. And I think he's the guy who put it, our goal was 25,000. And the Zoop guys were like, you know who just backed your book to put it over 25,000? Jeff Darrow. So
that's so that's cool, awesome. Man. Oh, that's great.
It's pretty cool. So that was my main influence. But definitely the Masters of the Universe world to the muscle tech genre. I really like, I've already kind of said it, but the Unforgiven is one of my favorite movies. And there's so many angles you can analyze that movie with, but I'm not going to bore your listeners anymore talking about it. But it's my favorite movie. And there's just a lot of themes in there that I wanted to explore and that kind of relate to my life now as a father, and as at least a little bit more of an adult as a father. And I wanted to explore those in comic book form. And I really wanted to do my version of my comic book my way. So I've never pitched the book to a publisher. I've had a lot of really big people in the industry reach out and like give support. And we got, you know, pull quote from Bill Sienkiewicz, and Mark Millar wrote me on Instagram the other day, and he just sent me a bunch of money signs, and he said, "I'm loving this new art." And I was like,
"Oh, wow." Money signs from Mark.
Money signs is a pull quote, Mark. You know
what I mean? Sort of. That's a great quote. That may be how he speaks, just generally.
Well, that's awesome.
I mean, it's just really, really cool stuff. And then I got to give a shout out to something about the design caught fire on Instagram, and we've had like 60 to 70 Instagram artists started drawing the character and promoting the book on their own. So I've had all levels of artists, from like beginning new artists to Dave Marquez, who's working on Batman. Rob Guillory is a good friend. Nick Darrington did one. It's so good. I'm using it as a back cover.
Awesome.
Chris Somney did one and mailed it to me, and I don't even know the guy. So and
then what is this? You're plugged in.
Yeah, I got lucky. I don't know. They're being supportive, and they know they're like, this idiot's risking everything. At least I do is throw him a sketch, you know? So, but it's cool. It's kind of built some momentum, and today it's kind of come to fruition with, we got funded in 5 hours, and that's really, you know, blew me away. And, it's what it's going to do. And a thank you to the fans for this is it's going to allow me to keep making this book the way I want without, you know, company oversight or having to sell the IP. Now I get to make it my way unapologetically, but at a professional level. I've got, you know, Chris Stevens, my editor, is an Eisner Award winner, and I've got a lot of guiding hands helping me. So yeah, I can't thank the fans enough, and I hope people check it out for sure. I've driven myself crazy working on it the last year. So getting a little buzz and getting to do interviews like this is a good way to come out of my shell.
You're carrying it better than the grizzled ass Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven. I'll tell you.
Yeah. It's doing great so far. I mean, I'm just looking at the page right now. You're up over almost $29,000.
Wow.
And there are 36 days left if people are interested in checking it out. You have some great levels here. You can get a digital copy. You can get a hardcover copy. You can get it signed. I love this add-ons part, where you can also get extra things as well, which is very cool and I think very different than Kickstarter. So this is really cool. Congratulations, Nick.
Well, thank you, guys. And I bought the URL, axewielder.com. And there's a bunch of preview pages and a bunch of there's like a buzz section of stuff that's going on and like nice things people have said online that Zoop has curated and kind of posted on there. So if anyone's interested, check it out. It's 148 page oversized hardcover. We're almost done. And the colors are about 40% done. Line art is 90% done. And during the next 36 days, I'm going to finish the line art off. So it'll be, by the time the campaign ends, the line art will be finished, and I'll be jumping in to help colors. And then we hired a really great book designer. I read the book Little Bird at Image by Ian Virtue.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's a great book. Yeah, so I love the design of that book. So I was like, I'm hiring this Ben Dider guy. I was like, I want my book to leave my Little Bird. So I reached out to him, and we got him, and he's going to be putting the book together here in the next month while we finish it, wrap things up. So we've got, you know, the most professional team I could afford, which is, you know, they're all Marvel, Image, DC, Eisner Award-winning type
level
guys.
Pretty professional.
Yeah, so my wife wants me to make money. So if you guys are interested at all, if you guys want to watch me break my He-Man toys again, come along for the ride.
Get in that angsty period again. Yeah. Well, and for everyone listening, definitely check out the YouTube video, which is on your YouTube page, Nick.
It'll be on the they've linked it to the site on Zoop. So if you scroll down Zoop, you can see it. But it's hosted on my YouTube page, which I'm not that active on, but I tried to be recently because the campaign was coming up. But everyone's welcome to follow me on socials. I'm just Nick Patera. And that's it, man. I appreciate you guys letting me blab about this for 30, 40 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. It's great talking to you.
It's a really fantastic project, man. Congratulations. Super badass. Hope you get to do it for a long time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate you guys.
Good luck.
Yeah, take care.
Great book.
All right. Once again, the project is Axe Wielder John. As we're taping, it's currently on Zoop. You can get there at zoop.gg and search for Axe Wielder John. It is awesome looking. If you're not here on the live show, definitely check it out. The art is so, so good. I can't wait to see that in full.
Attention podcast listeners and YouTube watchers. I'm Logan, the host of Mostly Superheroes, a weekly pursuit for the world's best stories with an emphasis on live action superhero stuff. Every week, join me, PC Mike, The Giggler, Scotty Scoop, and Carrie as we talk MCU, DCU, books, TV, movies, and more. MostlySuperheroes.com is where you want to be. Watch us on YouTube, listen where you get your podcasts, and we'll see you Monday, Sunday on Patreon. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah! Oh, okay. Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question over in YouTube in the comment section there, or ask a question over on Crowncast. But first, Pete was withholding information about what he was drinking earlier, so I think we can go over to
why you gotta hold it.
It's the old mango juice and vodka, you know what I mean?
Mango juice.
At this point, I feel like you're doing this as a bit. Like, I don't even think you like vodka. You're just finding stranger and stranger things to me.
How dare you? I love vodka.
I will say, Alex, that's the one thing I know he does like.
Yeah, that's true. I just feel like we're going to get to a point 5 weeks from now where his cat is sitting in a glass of vodka. He's like, yep, it's the old cat and vodka.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we just have to pay attention when he starts mixing vodka with vodka. That's the real mixer we have to watch out for. And, Pete, the reason I say what I'm drinking at the top of the show, because it often changes, because now I'm back on my Deschutes Fresh Cheese. One of my favorite beers.
Awesome.
It's not available in NYC.
Let's go to questions. We got one over here on Crowdcast. It was from Kevin. What are some of your favorite takes on parallel universes in or out of comics? So Kevin is wondering about in comics or in real life.
I like the parallel universe where I just like wear hats and suits all the time. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's sort of like Alex was saying, it's like a real normal shirt. Justin out there, you know?
Wow. I thought you were talking about like Zoot Suit style or something like that.
Yeah, like a long feather.
Yeah, a little peacock feather hanging out. Come on. Yeah,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, I'm in a Zoot Suit riot.
Yeah, somebody styles up. You like Squirrel Nut Zippers Kid?
Yeah.
You interested?
Boy. What? Oh, my watch spun off the end of my chain once again.
But favorite parallel universes for real in comics or out?
I did like, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, but there was a kind of parallel universe where it was like Wolverine and like Captain America and somebody else didn't have powers and they were just still like teaming up and trying to fight bad guys. And it was a kind of a fun look at like, if you, you know, kind of take their powers away, they're still kind of the same person and still want to do good. So I always thought that was pretty cool. Oh, and Ben Grimm. That was the other one, Ben Grimm. Mm.
Justin, what about you? Favorite parallel universe?
Well, there's a lot of them all the time.
Another one just popped up.
Where I answered this question first and you did it second.
Yeah.
That's a fun universe.
What if?
Every decision causes a split, some people say. I'm going to shout out the original Elseworlds annuals. As the parallel universe where we didn't have to sit in the continuity and like build it out to come back. It was just one story where in this world, Batman is a pirate, for instance, or whatever.
Old pirate, I like the Batman world.
Yeah, Leatherwing, I think was his name. I like those contained universes like that.
This is an upcoming one, so I don't know if it'll be my favorite, but I think it'll be Pete's favorite. Isn't Daniel Warren Johnson doing a title where the Justice League are dinosaurs and it takes place in a...
Hell yeah, dude. That? Yeah.
Seems like a lot of fun.
Makes sense. those dinosaurs, do they talk?
We're going to find out. It's going to be...
I think so. I think Batman solves prehistoric crime, so that's pretty cool.
How does the T-Rex get the Green Lantern ring on his tiny little fingers?
That's the big conflict of the issue. Josh Aish asks, has there ever been a time that you forgot to ask someone a question during an interview and then were upset about it later? If so, who was the interview with and what was the question?
Wow.
I mean, there's definitely like...
No, never. We've covered everything.
Yeah. We're journalists. Like, we're prepared.
There's definitely times where you like prep for interviews, you write down a bunch of questions, and then kind of like, you kind of throw that out the window a little bit because once it gets going, you kind of want to be in the moment and have something to refute, kind of look to if you get lost. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a ton of things I've wanted to ask people that just kind of organically didn't kind of fit what the vibe was, or you didn't want to kind of like derail something if they didn't want to talk about it. There have been plenty of times when I should have done that and didn't, and kind of plowed ahead with my own agenda that didn't go well.
But, oh, really?
I've never really noticed that. I've never partaken in that experience with my man PLP. I mean, I feel like Alex, when we would do the old New York Comic Con Sky Booth interviews, it was almost the opposite problem, where we'd look at each other and be like, got another question about this thing that we don't understand really. And we often did. We really took care of each other out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the other thing that it comes into is sometimes you just have time. Like, they're giving you like, okay, you only have time for one more question. You only have 10 minutes. Or doing carpet interviews in particular, you have time for like 2-3 questions tops, and that's pretty much it. So of course you're not going to get everything in.
I've told this. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I was going to, you know, I was going to tell a negative story. Do you have a funny story?
Mine's about a stupid thing that I did. And I
Okay. Why don't I tell mine, because it's maybe a little sadder. Spoilers for, this is not our interviews. This is for a job interview, but very recently I was interviewing the showrunner of Killing Eve. Spoilers for the end of Killing Eve here. But I had like 15 minutes with her, had a ton of stuff I wanted to jam through. And so I like was very focused on asking about specific moments and specific things. And I had problems with the finale, but I was trying to keep it like up and jamming, getting through it as quickly as possible. And she was certainly going in depth about a lot of things. And afterwards, it occurred to me, they kill a prominent gay character on the show. And I should have asked about the barrier gay tropes, barrier gays trope. And I was kicking myself as soon as I was like, oh my God, I should have just like teed up a question about that. So I was super bummed that I didn't ask that, even though, mind you, there were plenty of things in the interview that people read and they were super upset about. So it got a reaction anyway. Not at me, just people were very upset about the finale. And I got a lot of feedback of people being like, hey, I was really upset at the end of the show and then I read your interview with the showrunner and now I'm crying again. So
man,
there were a lot of issues with the finale, but
nice.
It is what it is.
But that said, journalism.
Yeah.
My story is, and I feel like I've told this at some point on the show, so stop me if it was too recently, but when I was interviewing George Lucas when I was working on, in the CNN building for a network called HLN, and they had me cover his very bad animated movie, Strange Magic. I think I saw you actually at the junket, Alex. You were working for somewhere,
MTV,
for MTV. So I wanted to ask him about Willow, one of my favorite
movies. Yeah, you love that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. And so at the end of the interview, we're asked a bunch of like dumb questions about like, so you like this fairy world and 70s rock? Cool. which is what that movie's about. I was like, oh, and one last question, George, which finger would you choose to rule the world? The question from that the wizard asked Willow and the other people trying to become his apprentice. And instead of being like this one, or like trying to play the Willow quote, he was like, hey, I wrote that. I know. That's why I said it. I'm not stealing your Willow line. And I was like, all right, thanks, George. Great talking to you.
I mean, I'll throw out another one from our history. This was way belatedly in terms of not asking the right questions of somebody. But we talked about this recently, or I guess not that recently, maybe about a year ago on our Marvel podcast. But when we were covering The Incredible Hulk, not the Ang Lee one, but the second one, the Marvel movie, I was looking back because like I vaguely remembered we had done an interview working for Newsarama about the movie, and I found it. They actually had it on video on YouTube. And I, at that moment, like it all came crashing into me because I was like, okay, I remember we were super excited because Tim Roth was there. So we're going to talk to Tim Roth, the Abomination. Gail Ann Hurd was there, the producer of Terminator and a bunch of other things. And they had another producer there who we weren't very interested in talking to. Yeah. And so we had all these questions for Tim Roth, all these questions for Gail Ann Hurd. And watching the video again, I was like squinting at it because it's terrible quality. And I was like, that's Kevin Feige. We had Kevin Feige there.
Inspired him by, we pushed him by ignoring him.
Yes,
to really
exactly.
create something.
He's like, I'll show those nerds.
And he did. And he sure did. Dear reader.
Yeah, could have asked him a couple of other things, but oh well, we didn't know better.
You think he had the MCU fully planned out at that point?
Well, he had already done Iron Man at that point, so I feel like we could have asked him about that or something, but we fucked up. That was our sliding doors moment, is what it was.
Certainly wow. That.
Jolene asks, who's a pulp era hero you would get you wish would get a live action reattempt?
Ooh, a pulpy hero. You want the Shadow?
No, the Billy Zane Phantom movie was pretty
Phantom,
much
yeah, I was going to say
that
Phantom
was perfect, though, so yeah, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, no, anytime you hear Billy Zane, you think perfect.
Perfect.
Give it to Zane.
Yeah. The Shadow, the Alec Baldwin Shadow was also perfect.
Yep.
John Carter, perfect. The new Star Wars. Oh, my God.
Yep, of course, the new Star Wars. Flash Gordon's a great answer from Stray Bullet there, because that movie is better than the ones we've just listed.
Flash!
Super weird. Yeah. Die! Hawk guy.
I mean, I'll tell you what, apropos of what we're talking about, not a pulp hero, but kind of close to the same sort of thing. He-Man, I guess we're getting a new He-Man movie. Like, if they could figure out a way to do that where it's not goofy and silly, that might be kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, some of the Masters of the Universe movies is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You got Monica from Friends in the role, trying to grab the time key.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
What about, I mean, this is maybe not far afield, but like it's a little different than what you're asking, but Darwin Cook's The Spectre was so good. And if you could do a legit animated take using the style of Darwin Cook's art, that would be, I think, amazing as a movie. And if anything, I would rather see an animated take on some sort of pulp hero, because then you could really capture the shadows and look of it versus live action, personally.
Yeah, great.
That's cool.
We got a question here from Jonathan McCool. Speaking of cool, I meant to ask here, but did you all see the new Nick Cage movie? How awesome did you think it was? Not specifically comic related, but it's The Cage.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm preparing a big movie run now that I'm back from traveling. And my wife's going out of town for 6 weeks, so I'm going to be home alone with the kids. Nice. You're going to see me literally fall apart.
Oh, man. You're going to take the kids to the Nick Cage movie.
I'm looking forward
to
this.
You're going to take the kids to go see
They're
going to
be at school. They're going to be at school, so I'm going to go to movies during the day sometimes.
Ooh, during the day.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Wow. Similarly, I found out this weekend, which I don't know, I didn't realize this, but there is a movie theater not too far from me that has $7 matinees and apparently is like pretty clean and nice. Like, it's not a chain theater.
$7 and clean and nice? Come on.
I know. I couldn't believe it either. But everybody else in my family went to go see The Bad Guys this week while I was at work.
Yeah.
And they were very impressed. They had a very nice time. So I can't wait. I'm going to start taking advantage of those $7 matinees like a real adult.
Wow. I think you mean an octogenarian is what, yep. Who does that, Alex. Gonna that's not
go
adult
see a
thing.
Movie at 11, have dinner right after that, go to sleep.
When people say I want to watch an adult movie, they don't mean seeing a 2 o'clock cheap matinee.
I don't know any other definition. The short answer is no, none of us saw that movie, but looks fun.
Wait, shout out real quick to Josh H. Each week, Justin will look more and more haggard. That's 100% correct. We should do a before and after photo because
take a screenshot and then let's compare it, you know, a couple
real quick question. Not to get to you personally, but was. Is your wife going to do anything, or was she like,
she left for a couple of weeks? My turn.
I mean, it's a little bit of both, but she booked a role in a theater in Nantucket, actually, one of her favorite places. Ooh. So she's going to be acting in a great role, a Steve Martin play that they're doing there on the island. So she's going to be there for 6 weeks. And it's a perfect revenge because I was gone for about that amount of time doing the travel show I was working on. The scale is in balance, but for some reason, I think I'm going to literally fall to pieces.
Now you're on the post production of that, right? Do we got to wait a year for that to come out? Like, what's the timeline on that?
Hell no, coming in July. I will be talking about it a lot. The trailer did drop. I'll post it in our Slack if anybody wants to see it.
Yeah, and I will say, not to get too businessy, there was a report that came out today. Warner Brothers Discovery is the new company. They own TNT and TBS and all the TDETs. And I saw a quick headline about them making some changes, but it turns out it's just scripted stuff that they're targeting right now. So good to go. Whew.
Good to go. I know everyone was stressed, but the network really likes the show. We're starting to see some cuts. It's going to be good.
Whoa, nice. Exciting. Very exciting.
This is from Stray Bullet. We talk a lot about comics that we think should be adapted to TV and movies, but what's two shows that should go away?
Two shows,
yeah. Rather than two adaptations that should be made, two adaptations that should die a horrible death.
Wow. That's harsh, man.
I mean, yeah. I'll throw out one that I'll be slightly positive about, but also negative. We talked about this before, The Flash. Like, I think... I've enjoyed The Flash sporadically, but it's about to go into ninth season. I think we're good.
I think we've seen enough. The CW shows is dead.
Well, yeah, especially since we should just pull them from the show and put them in the movies and then cancel the TV show.
No, absolutely not. Let him be free. Let Grant Gustin go on run and play up in Connecticut or whatever he wants to do.
Oh, he should go run? He should just keep running? Run right off set?
Run, Granty, run.
Oh, man.
I mean, as a whole, also the Arrowverse, I think like they can keep
watch
it going.
What you're saying. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, they should cancel Arrow. That's what I'm saying. Oh, they did. Can't. So it's fine. Superman Lois is very good, but I think, and there are other things that I really enjoy in some of those shows, but the whole thing is starting to feel like antiquated. It hasn't really moved forward in any significant way. Wow. I think changes obviously are coming in terms of Warner Brothers Discovery, in terms of the CW sale and all of those things. And there will also be some changes there. But I don't know. I think those shows, they have their fans. I am sometimes one of them, but they can probably go and I think it'll be all right.
Oh, man.
You know what? They should bring back Arrow and cancel it again. That's my answer.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Great. We got another question here from Jolene. Are you worried that now you started a Doom Patrol podcast that is now jinxed and will be canceled?
No. Wow.
Coming for
us. I don't know. We've been doing a Riverdale podcast for a while, and they surprisingly have not canceled that yet.
Yeah.
So
that was the first TV podcast we started doing back in the day.
Yeah, there you go.
And they're already filming the next season, as we've said. So, like... Once those cameras are rolling, Doom Patrol, not Riverdale.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So there's at least one more season of Doom Patrol. We'll see what happens. Similarly, Stanley asks, any other secret podcasts in the works like Doom Patrol? First of all, the answer is no. But also, if they were secret, we probably couldn't tell you. But also, no.
Yeah. I guess what's the next show that we refuse to watch and then secretly watched for years?
I don't know. I guess we should start that Walking Dead podcast.
Oh, my God.
No. That'd be a fun use of our time. Imagine binge-watching Walking Dead. Pete, you need to watch season 6, episode 14 tonight.
I think if we told Pete we were doing a secret Walking Dead podcast that was, at this point, what, 175 episodes long or something like that, and we weren't releasing until afterwards, Pete would literally die.
Yeah. It was so dumb not to release it after season 1. Give the people what they want, man.
Who is new to this, by the way, the Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, is now officially live in all sorts of feeds. Or if you are a Patreon supporter, you can get all 34 episodes right now, which is pretty cool. We got one last one here I wanted to read. This is from Lee Wananana. Did everyone get their 6 p.m. treats from Pete?
Oh, yeah. My favorite segment on the show returns. Did we fluff the rough? did we bloop the bleep?
Puff the fluff, man.
Puff the fluff. Give that kitty a treat.
Can I tell you honestly what I picture every time you say puff the fluff? You're not going to like it, Pete.
Oh, boy.
picture you blowing in the cat's anus. Like, oh! Blowing, blowing it up like a balloon.
You just gotta reinflate the cat.
What the fuck, man?
I mean,
that's where your brain goes,
Alex. For that to be your first thought,
you ruined that.
That's more. I will say that's more on you. Puff the Fluff is weird, but you blowing up a cat's butt.
Don't say it anymore.
That's you, brother.
Yeah, that's no, you. That's Pete. That's on Pete. I think
you're putting a lot on that, man.
Nope.
I will say a cat's butthole does look like a water balloon. The end. So,
and you can twist it the same way. Oh, you can tie it up.
Yeah. That way,
that's my hot tip for you. You wouldn't have to puff the fluff every evening if you just tied up the cat's anus like a balloon. And then the air wouldn't get out.
I can't tell you how much I hate you.
Obviously, you puff the fluff, but are you inflanusing the anus?
This is the worst.
Pete, this is your life.
It sucks, man.
Anyway, let's get to the real question. Did you give the cat the treat, the six-man treat?
Yes, of course I did.
What's the treat?
What do you mean?
Blown up asshole? What's the treat?
It's just a cat treat, dude. It's just a little tuna-flavored cat treat.
Nice.
Yeah, but did you give everyone else their 6 p.m. treat? What does that mean?
I don't know.
What about my 6 p.m. treat, Pete?
I don't know what that would entail, nor do I want to know.
I've got a couple of ideas. Would you like me to offer them up to your people?
I have a feeling he wants you to blow in his ass. To be honest.
I don't want to. No spoilers. No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
All right, folks. That is it for your audience questions. We're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Yeah. Now that I can't
Cat
talk.
Daddy.
Oh, my God.
Treat King and Daddy.
All right. It's the part where we get back to you, the lovely audience. This is an opportunity to win $25 in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you go get some comics, man.
It's right.
Stelbs, do we have a pre-pick, or are we going?
We don't. No, I think we turned down Kevin last week.
Yeah.
I don't know if Kevin wants to come in this week. If so, Kevin, let us know in the comments, and we will bring you into the stream. He is here. All right, here we go. We're going to bring in Kevin. Kevin's going to do a little trivia and get a chance to win $25 from Midtown Comics. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
It could go either way.
The fluff could get puffed.
Oh, my God. Don't say that. I wonder what Kevin's going to be dressed as.
Probably a giant cat, I'm guessing.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think he'll have a puppet?
A puffer?
He might be a puppet.
Yeah. Oh, have a puppet. I thought you said have a puffer.
Hey! It's Alf.
Straight out of Melmac.
Yeah, don't eat any cats, man.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is fucked up. This
hey,
is like
Pete. You think I should come over and visit you anytime soon?
No, man. Stay away, man. I love my cat.
His 6 p.m. treat is a cat. For those of you that are not watching this, Alf is here.
Yeah. Alf, do you want to do... Pete seems frozen with terror or wonder, or maybe just actually frozen. I think his camera is actually frozen. Pete got so terrified by the idea of Alf maybe eating his cat.
You know, I have that effect on a lot of people.
All right. Well, I can do some trivia for you if you want, Alf.
Wait. It is funny. We've never really considered the fact that when Pete can't do trivia, it doesn't happen.
Doesn't have to happen. I guess who kills me?
You know what? I'm getting older now. I'm really, you know, stepping back from a lot of the killing people anymore. I only kill me. Ha!
There you go. You got it. All right, question one, correct.
You know what? When you get to be 321 years old and look it up, that's how old I am.
Look at these Alf facts.
You really start to feel your age.
Uh-oh. Here goes Alex.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a buff of the fluff.
All right, question number two. In the first episode of Alf, the TV show, a creature that lives in the house with Alf becomes extraordinarily large. What creature is that?
Oh, wow. You're really taking me back there.
Yeah. It's funny to ask this question to the person. Yeah. It's like asking me about, like, hey, what did you do?
I'll tell you what. A mouse. B, a cockroach. C, Eliza Dushku.
Well, you know what? I was really trying to think back, and I was scratching my head and thinking, was it a mouse or was it a cockroach? I'm pretty sure it was a cockroach.
It was a cockroach. That's correct, Alf.
Look,
you're two
at
for
that.
Two. Incredible.
No,
you know, I've never gone back and watched my old stuff. Mm-hmm. It's you one of those things where it's like, you know, a lot of actors, we just can't watch ourselves. Oh,
I hear you.
Oh, hey, Pete, we're already two questions into trivia.
Sweet.
We're doing a trivia based on Alf with a little bit of a tribute to the legend Eliza Dushku.
Wow.
R.I.P.
Don't say R.I.P.
She died during the taping of this show.
Oh, come on. That's not cool. Don't put that out there.
All right. Do you actually have trivia, Pete, now that you're unfrozen?
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. But today's trivia is a topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Liz Sheridan.
Hey, my old co-star. You know?
That's right.
You know, she gets to date
all
James
three
Dean,
options.
Right?
Sure. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, Alf. Question number one. Who is joining the team in Avengers number 55? Is it A, Daybird, B, Nighthawk, or is it C, Brian Dennehy? So it's either A, which isn't real, or it's B, Nighthawk.
You know what? I'm going to go with, I think you said B?
That's correct.
Nice.
Wow.
All right, here we go. Yeah, Nighthawk is joining the Avengers. All right, here we go. Question number two. DC announced its next big event. It is blank. Is it A, Shadow War Zone, B, The Friend Zone, or is it C, Christine Baranowski?
Baranski?
So it's either, yeah, Baranski's, thank you. Is it A, which is the correct answer, Shadow War Zone, or you could pick B or C.
Pete, I'm thinking I'm going to go with A on this one.
That is correct. The
great
Shadow
choice,
War Zone.
Good job.
Here we go. Last one, Alf. Don't get cocky. And Devil's Reign Omega number one. Who is teaming up with Luke Cage? Is it A, the Winter Soldier, B, Danny Rand, or is it C, Terrence Stamp? So it's either A, Winter Soldier, don't pick it, or it's B, Danny Rand.
Tracks.
So Danny Rand's going to team up with Luke Cage? Wow. Why has nobody done that before?
That, well, it's coming.
Alf dropping some comic commentary.
Yeah.
Amazing. That is 3 for 3. So, Alf, you have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics.
Yes.
You can also
comics back in the 80s, right?
Yeah. You know what? We'll do $25 to the North Shore Animal League. How about that? I feel like you could probably use that.
There
better.
We go.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Great. Alf, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Have a good night. Wait. You never asked me about the legal eagles.
Ah, Alf got it. It was legal eagles.
Alf figured out the secret movie, more like Answer Life Form, if you ask me.
Oh,
yeah, I get that. I really do.
I'll
tell you what. I think I blacked out for the last 5 full minutes.
All right, bye. Thank you to Kevin. Alf. Thank you to Alf. What a special segment. As we all know.
Special segment.
Comics are great, and they're coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to we have Demons number 2, as well as Action Comics 1042, Punisher number 2, and Step by Bloody Step number 3.
Wow. That's a lot of twos.
Yeah,
that's great. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to? And maybe if you want to describe the comments.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah,
or don't.
I guess I'm going to go with The Amazing Spider-Man number 1 coming out from Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. This is written by Zeb Wells. It's a sort of reboot of the Peter Parker Spider-Man. And in a world where a lot of these Peter Parker, like, new looks and everything are like, he's back. He's, you know, he had a hard thing happen, but he's still the same old Spidey. This one feels different in a good way. And I think it's going to take Peter Parker Spider-Man to some different places.
I'm looking forward to Ghost Cage number 2 from Image Comics. Yeah. This is a book that's very manga inspired about a factory worker, I guess, who is fighting their way up to the top of the factory.
That's a fun one.
Along with the tidy ghost and a weird creature. It's wild. It's weird. The art is absolutely incredible. And tying into our guest, this is from Nick Trigoda, who did art on another Jonathan Hickman book, East of West. So there's, you know, a little bit of a theme there. And folks,
Nick's hot Nick's
hot Nick's. And that is it for this week's show. We want to thank Nick Patera for coming on the show. Check out Axe Wielder John, which is available on Zoop right now. Go and support it. It is awesome. Next week on the show, we're going to have a bunch of great guests here. Neil Clyde is going to be back to talk about the panel. Also, Dean Hashbiel and Vito Del Sante are going to be back to talk about the Fox family values. So that should be a lot of fun.
Fun show right there.
As mentioned earlier, the Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, is officially live now with the first couple of episodes coming out weekly, where you can have all 34 episodes now by pledging on our Patreon. Riverdale After Dark, or Riverdale podcast, is coming out weekly. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is almost done with Moon Knight at this point. We're going to have new episodes coming out for episode 5 and episode 6.
Tomorrow,
there you go. Also, Lock and Key Unlocked, as mentioned earlier, we have a new episode all about Lock and Key Volume 7. That's live in that feed. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, folks.
Take care of yourself.
Don't forget to puff the fluff, Pete.
It's late.